last night.
As you know, Guru Maharaj put in Narayana Astra, very bow, all the illusions made by Yakshas and sacred illusions. The Srila Prabhupada says the purport that Maya and Krishna are side by side. As soon as Krishna is there, Maya is separated. And the second point is very important, that ISKCON is the land of Chaitanya tree.
Good points. Any other points?
Under the influence of anger, what is mentioned as Ati Roshen. Sometimes we tend to cross the line of how much is required. So we should not overdo violence to society. It is not required.
Good. Anything else?
A devotee is always under the shelter of the authority, like whether it could be parents or it could be a spiritual master. So once we just do what the thing, we don't have to face material suffering.
That's a good point also. Anything else? Any other points?
So the example of the great devotees is always followed by the common people. So that's why Achar and Prachar. So that's why Manu Maharaj was saying to what King Manu was saying to Guru Maharaj, that you should follow. Whatever you are doing, you should be followed by others. So you should not get that angry that you should kill all the yakshas. So you should kill only one, the one who killed you. And you should just don't show that much anger, otherwise people will criticize you.
Good. Any other points? So what is chapter 11 called? Okay, so Swayambhuva Manu has to come because Dhruva Maharaj becomes so angry because his brother has been killed, that he goes to what's it called? Alakapuri? And then he begins to kill many thousands of yakshas. So then Swayambhuva Manu appears and gives him the instruction that one should not become so angry, but rather one should be just and fair in one's dealing of chastisement like that. So now we'll continue with the instructions of Swayambhuva Manu as he instructs Dhruva Maharaj further about how to control one's anger and how to rise above the bodily platform of life. So tonight we'll go from verses 14 to 20. One who actually satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead during one's lifetime becomes liberated from the gross and subtle material conditions. Thus being freed from all material modes of nature, he achieves unlimited spiritual bliss.
Usha Manaji, can you read the first paragraph?
In the previous verse, it has been explained that one should treat all living entities with tolerance, mercy, friendship and equality. By such behavior, one satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And upon his satisfaction, the devotee immediately becomes free from all material conditions. The Lord also confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who sincerely and seriously engages in my service immediately becomes situated in this transcendental state where he can enjoy unlimited spiritual bliss. Everyone in this material world is struggling hard in order to achieve blissful life. Unfortunately, people do not know how to achieve it. Atheists do not believe in God, and certainly they do not please Him. Here it is clearly said that upon pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one immediately attains to the spiritual platform and enjoys unlimited blissful life. To become free from material existence means to become free from the influence of material nature.
Good. So what are the points here?
The person who is attached to the Lord is liberated straight away? Or surrender to Him is liberated?
Good. Anything else?
The point that Gopal is making here is that if we overcome our envy, that's what he's saying, if we treat every other person equally and without envy, then we can get rid of our gross and subtle material conditions. So that's also one way in which we can overcome the influence of material energy. If we can overcome our envy.
Good point. Anything else?
The aim of this is to please the Lord. That's the main purpose.
Yes, sincerity and service. Sincerity and seriousness in service of the Lord will give us the most higher happiness.
That's good. So Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's spiritual master, he said, do not try to see Krishna, and act in such a way that Krishna will desire to see you. So this is the motivation of the devotee. This is the attitude of the devotee. We don't try to see Krishna, but we act in such a way that Krishna will want to see us. So that means we work on our devotional attitude. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the introduction of the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, Srila Prabhupada says that spiritual advancement depends upon the attitude of the performer. So, according to our attitude while we're performing our devotional service, then that is how we advance. So that is what Krishna is most concerned with. What is our attitude while doing our service? Not that we are trying to see Krishna or placing emphasis on trying to see Krishna, but rather our emphasis is on is Krishna satisfied with our service? Is Krishna happy? This is what the devotee is concerned about. Is Krishna happy? Not that we're trying to draw attention to ourselves necessarily. Just like sometimes when we serve the spiritual master, we become very preoccupied with gaining the attention of the guru. That we want the guru to look at us or to recognize us or to compliment us or to give us some praise. But that is not the motivation of the disciple. The disciple is simply interested in seeing is the guru satisfied. Is the guru being served appropriately? Is he comfortable? Are his requirements being met? This is the attitude of the disciple. Not that he's looking for praise or attention. So similarly, when we are serving Krishna, this should be our attitude. Not that we're trying to get recognition of Krishna, in the sense that we're not trying to see Krishna, but rather we're acting in such a way that Krishna desires to see us. He sees that our service is satisfying Him. That we are doing something which is practical in our service. Just like Prabhupada said that if you preach and spread Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will automatically see you. Krishna will recognize you. If you make some endeavor to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, then Krishna automatically, he will recognize you. So you don't have to endeavor separately. That's why Srila Prabhupada was not emphasizing that we try to see Krishna in an artificial way, but simply, Prabhupada even says that you will not see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. You will see Krishna in the order of the spiritual master. By following the Guru's instruction, then you will see Krishna automatically. That will give you the qualification to see Krishna. That will make you recognized by Krishna. So that's what the devotee is interested in. We're interested in fulfilling the order of the spiritual master. And by fulfilling the order of the spiritual master, then automatically we will see Krishna. We don't have to become preoccupied with seeing Krishna artificially. Automatically Krishna will come to us when he's satisfied. And then Prabhupada points out then, what is the result? We will attain a blissful life. Bliss is not something you have to worry about separately. Simply, the devotee is interested in pleasing Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, automatically you will become blissful. You don't have to worry about seeking bliss artificially. I want to experience bliss. You just serve Krishna, automatically you will experience bliss. Why? Because when Krishna is satisfied, you will become satisfied. So you don't have to worry, am I enjoying in spiritual life? This should not be our motivation. Am I enjoying? No, is Krishna enjoying? Is the spiritual master satisfied? Are the devotees satisfied? Then automatically we will enjoy. But our enjoyment is secondary. Prabhupada points this out, that we are secondary enjoyers. If we simply focus our attention on pleasing Krishna, then we will enjoy automatically. Just like we're swinging Radha and Krishna in the jhulan. So the whole point of the festival is to give them pleasure. Right? Hands up if you're also happy swinging Radha and Krishna on the jhulan. Are you happy doing it? Everyone's happy. So do we have to do anything? Do we have to go and jump on the jhulan? Do we have to worry about ourselves swinging? Then we'll be happy. I'll be happy when I am enjoying. No. We're just concentrating, is Radha and Krishna enjoying? Right? And if they're enjoying, then automatically everyone else is feeling blissful. So this is the secret of spiritual life. You will feel blissful when Krishna is happy. You will feel blissful when the Guru is happy. You'll feel blissful when the devotees are happy. You don't have to endeavor separately. We don't have to worry about our enjoyment. Automatically we'll enjoy. That is spiritual life. So this is what Prabhupada is teaching us. So, any points?
Just trying to understand the way Prabhupada is looking at this chapter and the last chapter. In the beginning of this one, when Guru Maharaj has gone and started killing the yakshas, and he said, it is the duty of a Kshatriya, even if you know his brother is just trying to kill, but still he's doing it. Now he is doing more than what is required. And on the other hand, we also see he has seen the Lord, so he has got the Sakshatkar of the Lord, and still he is behaving like this. So is that's the way he's teaching us a lesson, that even if we become Nitya Siddhas, or we have, then we can also do. Just trying to understand, because you should not be doing it like this.
The whole pastime is hard to understand, because why would a pure devotee act like this? So Prabhupada explained in the previous chapter that even for a pure devotee, he may sometimes feel these emotions. So he felt that emotion, then he went and then he was killing so many people. And then Swayambhuva Manu has come and he has corrected him. He said that you should not kill so many people, it is too much. So it is hard to understand or reconcile the entire pastime, because he is a pure devotee. Dhruva Maharaj is a pure devotee. Yet he does these things. But if you look at his entire past, in the next chapter he goes back to the spiritual world. Okay. So then we can understand, it is difficult to understand, to reconcile the whole thing. So we just have to accept Prabhupada's statements, and even I don't fully understand, I don't fully comprehend the entire situation. Any other points?
Prabhu is considered as the father of the mankind. The mankind resides on this planet. But it looks like Mr. Swamibhu Amaru is not residing on this planet. He is probably the book somewhere within the universe. Do we have an understanding of where does he reside? And actually administer the affairs of the universe?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure where he resides. It said previously that his capital was in the third canto. It was mentioned his capital. Can't remember the name of the place, but it was mentioned. It didn't mention where it was. But then he went, he definitely, when he married Devahuti to Kardama, then that was on Earth, and now he's on Earth, so I'm not sure if his capital's on Earth or where it is.
So, you know how Prabhupada said, if you're pure devotee, why you fall down? But we know that someone who is on Bhava, he's a pure devotee. And we see that with that Bharat Maharaj, he fell down from that position. So, on one side, it says why he fell down if he's pure devotee. So, is there any explanation to that?
That particular pastime?
Yes, because Prabhupada said, if you're pure devotee, how you have fallen down. And we can see that actually Bharat Maharaj has fallen down.
Yeah, the Acharyas mentioned that with Bharat Maharaj, that particular example, there was some offense which was committed in the past, and the offense had not been fully nullified.
So, then you can be.
Yeah, well, if we get very, very technical, then Bhava is considered to be not prema. Prema is absolute nullification of everything.
But it says after the liberation, pure devotion starts, and he should not be engaged in
pure devotion. Yeah, and then the other point which is brought out is that he didn't follow the instruction of his guru. He neglected the instruction of his guru. There's several things which were wrong in Bharat Maharaj's case. The other thing which is mentioned is it's very difficult to fall down from that stage of Bhava. Generally it does not happen. But there was some defect there, so.
I think Maharaj Swami explains in one of his talks that Bharat Maharaj's Bhava had a tinge of Aishwarya. It was not Madhurya. So his Bhava stage was not basically the perfect stage. And even when the Bhava is in tinge with basically Aishwarya, one can become divided by the Aishwarya of the material universe. There is no Madhurya over here. So if one attains the stage of the Madhurya, it's completely unconnected. So Maharaj was really very technical about the whole subject. Hold on about the Maharaj.
Any other points? Okay, so we'll read the next paragraph. Shri Radha Vallabhapu. Can you read the second paragraph?
The word samprasana, which is used in this verse, means being satisfied. A person should act in such a way that the Lord is satisfied by the activity. It is not that he himself is to be satisfied. Of course, when the Lord is satisfied, the devotee automatically becomes satisfied. This is the secret of the process of bhakti yoga. Outside of bhakti yoga, everyone is trying to satisfy himself. No one is trying to satisfy the Lord. Carnies, grossly try to satisfy their senses. But even those who are elevated to the platform of knowledge also try to satisfy themselves. In a subtle form, carnies try to satisfy themselves by sense gratification, and the jnanis try to satisfy themselves by subtle activities or mental speculation. And thinking themselves to be God. Yogis also try to satisfy themselves by thinking that they can achieve different mystic perfections. But only devotees try to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotees' process of self-realization is completely different from the process of the karmis, jnanis and the yogis. Everyone else is trying to satisfy himself. Whereas the devotee strives only to satisfy the Lord. The devotional process is completely different from the others. By working to please the Lord, by engaging his senses in the Lord's loving services, service, the devotee is immediately situated on the transcendental platform and he enjoys unlimited blissful life.
So, any other points here?
Story from where in Mahabharata, Krishna takes one morsel from that pot which they had left. So when he has that, Vibhasa Muni and all his followers, everybody becomes satisfied from their hunger. So like if the Lord is satisfied, everyone will satisfy, everyone else is satisfied.
Good.
So the Griha, or basically the center, is kind of the various categories of the people. The Kali is about the fruitive desires, is that we have. The Gyan is hovering around speculation. The devotee is about Krishna in the center. That makes all the difference.
So Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami, Sakale, Ashanta. Krishna Bhakti Nishkama, Atta Eva, Shanta. That the bhukti, the mukti, and the siddhi. Bhukti means the material enjoyer, the karmis. The mukti means those who are after liberation. And siddhi means the yogis who want siddhas, siddhis or perfections. Then, sakali, ashanta. Ashanta means they are never peaceful. But, Krishna bhakta, the devotees of Krishna, nishkama. They do not have any material desires. Atta eva, shanta. They are peaceful. Shanti. Devotees are peaceful because they have no other desires than to serve Krishna. Everyone else is self-interested. Everyone in the universe is self-interested. But the devotees are not self-interested. We are interested in making Guru and Krishna happy. So it is shanta. Then devotees are peaceful. They don't want anything else. They're satisfied. Devotees have enough. They don't desire more and more and more. Everyone else desires more. Now, how, even as devotees, how will we become shanti or peaceful? We become peaceful or satisfied when we do devotional service without expectation of return. If we're expecting something in return, that is not pure devotional service. That is Mishra Bhakti. It is mixed devotional service. So, we have to begin to practice pure devotional service, which means we're not asking for anything in return for our service, but simply we're doing the service for the satisfaction of Krishna, or the Guru, or the Vaishnavas. Just like if you do a service for a devotee, you do Vaishnav Seva. You do some service for the devotee, but you will only become satisfied when you do the service without desiring anything in return. Even amongst devotees, quite often we do something for someone, but then there is some expectation of return. So that is not pure devotional service, and you'll never be satisfied. Your heart will never be peaceful. Even though you're doing so much for others, but as long as there's some expectation there, you'll never become peaceful. But the devotee is always peaceful, fully peaceful, because he's unmotivated. He's just doing the service for the service sake, without any expectation of reward. His only desire is more service. This is what Krishna said to the gopis. Naparayeham. I cannot repay you. How can I repay you? Because you have done so much service for me. The only thing that I can say to you is simply be satisfied with the service and that you will have more and more service in the future. Just be satisfied with that. So that is the attitude of the devotees. We're simply satisfied that we have more service to do for Krishna. And materially, we are not so interested. We don't expect things in return. Just like the devotees live very simply. We're happy just to sleep on the floor, just have one small mattress. We dress very simply. We eat simply. We're simple. Devotees are not complicated. We don't need a lot. We are akinchana or nishkinchana. That is one of the qualities of a devotee. Devotee must be akinchana, which means without material possessions. He just lives a very simple life. But his only desire is that he can do some service for Krishna. That is the way we saw Prabhupada live. Before Prabhupada came to America, he was living in the Radha Damodar Mandir, and he was completely akinchana, which means virtually no material possessions. Very simple, very sad. And he was only satisfied in serving his guru, serving Krishna. That is what the devotee wants. I think so. Any points?
In Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Brahma Buddha Prasannatma na sochati na kanchati. Thereafter, it says, that is the platform from where the pure emotional service begins. So, what he is saying is that even before the pure emotional service begins, a person is peaceful, isn't it? Because there is no such thing. There is na sochati na kanchati. So, there is a level at which you attain the peace, and pure emotional service has not begun.
Yeah, because like we're practicing sadhana, so we're on anatta nivritti. If you take it that way, if you look at the nine levels of bhakti,
okay.
So then we're on the level of anatta nivritti. But we're feeling peaceful, we're feeling satisfied like that, because if the devotional service is done without so much interest, self-interest, there's some self-interest there, but without so much, the more we can render devotional service like that, the more peaceful we become, the more satisfied we become. Just like all of us are feeling satisfied in our service. Yeah, we have a taste for preaching about Krishna. So it's not that we're exalted advanced devotees, but even on our level, you know, some Majjhima Adhikari level, you know, going through anatta nivritti, but we're still feeling very blissful, very satisfied, very peaceful, like that, not desiring material things. So that's the potency even of sadhana bhakti, kleshagni, shubhada. So kleshagni means the material distresses, material things, they go away. So then you will feel peaceful and all the satisfied, all those things. Any other points?
Okay, what's for a devotee, what's better situation? You say if he's living a comfortable life without any distress and happy living and all, and other side is if he is little bit distressed because of material miseries, which situation is more favorable for him to advance?
I don't really understand.
Like, if you see a devotee is in a devotee's life, he's very comfortable having a nice living, he's earning good money and all. And other side, there is a devotee, he's not really that comfortable because of some material distress, which is very favorable for advancing more, like being just comfortable or going through some troubles and all.
You can say someone who doesn't have any material discomfort, but I haven't met anyone who's like that. Everyone's got some problem like that, so I don't think there's any such thing as having like a materially comfortable situation in the material world, because as soon as you have one, it disappears pretty quickly anyway. So, and if you have got one, then just stick around for a little bit longer and it'll disappear also. So I don't think, devotees, we don't worry so much about the material things. Yeah, we just live a comfortable life. Prabhupada said, live a comfortable life. So we're comfortable, we have our material necessities are met, we're satisfied, but we don't get so caught up on, you know, should I reduce everything and make myself miserable, because then I'll be more attached to Krishna. You know, just let the material energy do that for you. You don't have to worry. Yeah, don't worry about you making adjustments. It will happen by itself. Like that. So just meditate on Krishna. Like
my Guru Maharaj, the Amrit Maharaj, said once, if you can earn $1 billion and still be Krishna conscious, go for it. But if you can't, then find a situation which is more conducive for your devotional service. So I think what Prabhupada is trying to make is, he's talking on a relative platform, but how he can be more, which situation will be more conducive in terms of Because we see, obviously, there are people who are struggling financially but very good devotees, or there are also devotees, they are financially well off and still they are doing good devotional service.
See, for a grihastha, he gets purified by dan. Dan means charity. So that's how the grihastha becomes purified. So if you're earning good money, then give charity. Give to the service of your guru. And then you'll become purified. So what's the disadvantage? Who is more advanced? The person who has no money, who has renounced the brahmachari, who is giving everything to Krishna, or the grihastha, who is wealthy, that is giving all his wealth to Krishna? Who is better situated? They're equal. No? Because both are giving everything to Krishna, so what's the difference?
Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the books, one is completely Akinchana, who has no material possession, and one who is materially comfortable, but is practicing completely Yukta Vairagya. They are of the same type.
There is another verse of Srimad Bhagavatam where it says, Pranayana Parasandhe Nasipaschana Vipeti, Swarga Apavardhana Akeshwa Akibhulayata. And then it is said that devotee is, devotional life is not dependent on any situation, whether it is Swarga or Apavarga or Narakeshwa, whether it is hell or heaven. Devotional life is beyond any situation of material life. So a person who is actually situated is not troubled either in opulence nor by poverty.
Yeah, that's the test of every devotee, because when you do get some wealth or you do get some opulence, the tendency to is to become bewildered, even when we think we're a little advanced. But then you get some wealth and then suddenly you become bewildered, so you realize it's actually, that's why devotees are recommended to be very careful of women and money. It means the opposite sex. Be very careful of the opposite sex and money, because these two things are very detrimental to advancement in Krishna consciousness if they're not used in the service of Krishna. Any other points?
The person who's materially well settled on has enough, he doesn't have to worry about the day-to-day things of his life, thing, and then so he can actually spend more time in devotional service. And on the other hand, of course, Krishna also says that I take away everything away from my devotee. You know, so it is, I suppose it's on the level of the devotee where he stands.
Yeah, so like I said, we, devotees don't worry about those things so much. We just let Krishna take care of it. Because Krishna says that if you render devotional service but you're unsuccessful in this life, then you'll take birth in the family of Vaishyas, rich Vaishyas, or some Brahmanas, and you'll be in a materially satisfactory situation in which you can render service to Krishna in your next life. So as devotees, we don't worry too much. Yeah, we don't worry, oh, I'll reduce my poverty, I'll reduce my wealth and so forth. Krishna will just do that for us. Okay? We just do service and Krishna will take care of it. What we need, what we don't need, Krishna will take care of that. Krishna takes things away that he wants to take away, he gives us things he wants to give us. We don't have to worry about it so much, because even we work so hard to get something, and then just before you get it, then Krishna takes it away. So then we don't worry about that so much. So, any other points? Okay.
See, I was thinking that...
What? Is this a serious point?
No, this is Lord Krishna and the devotees. Mm. The devotee is always protected by Lord Krishna and his devotees. Mm. Right?
Mm.
So maybe all the excesses which were killed by Prumaras, they were destined to have a bit of salvation. They must have done something good.
Maybe.
That's why Lord wanted Prumaras to kill them.
Yeah, maybe. Could have been like that. Or it could have just been their good fortune that Dhruva Maharaj happened to kill them.
Yeah.
Like that sort.
So they get a bit of salvation.
Yeah, they benefited.
Yeah. Otherwise, if they were not destined to die, then maybe Manu, King Manu had come before, or the rishis would have come before.
from what she said. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Nityananda also goes to one particular village, and I think it's not written properly by somebody, and then he curses the whole village and some plague or something. So that there, you know, actually one person is committing a sin, but the whole village has to suffer. And I think in the purport somewhere it is written that this is what happens. Sometimes, you know, people have to take the karma of one single individual from there. The whole village sometimes has to take collective karma. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. And it also means that if those people were in that village, then that means generally they would have been sinful people also. Because that person was a cow killer, like that. He was a Muslim, he was like a very sinful person. And because taker that pretty much everyone in that village would have been something similar. So that's why they got that reaction. Okay. Now, Swayambhu Manu, he tries to instruct Dhruva Maharaj in the next few verses about the nature of the material energy. Because the nature of the material energy is that it is temporary. The nature of the material body is that the material body is temporary. This is what Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly explained that the material body is temporary. So now, Swayambhu Manu will give those same instructions to Dhruva Maharaj. The material body is temporary. Why are you getting so caught up over your brother dying? Your brother must die. That is the nature of the material world. Like that. It's just the material body who has died. The soul has not perished. So then why are you getting so angry and destroying so many? Like that. So he's giving this kind of instruction. The creation of the material world begins with the five elements, and thus everything, including the body of a man or a woman, is created by these elements. By the sexual life of man and woman, the number of men and women in this material world is further increased. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that everyone must die in this material world. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? One who is born is sure to die. And one who dies is sure to take birth again. Yeah, this is the nature of the material world. That when you die, that simply means you're about to take birth again. Right? And if you are born, that means you've simply died a very short period of time ago. So that's the nature of the material world. This is inescapable. So why is all of this happening? This is happening because of the living entities, karma. So therefore, a devotee sees the material world like this, right? It is simply birth and death. So we do not become so bewildered. Just like a few years ago, then we had the tsunami, which spread throughout the Indian Ocean. And 250,000 people or so died within a few hours. So then, everyone was very bewildered. Even devotees were becoming bewildered. You saw what they were writing on the internet. Even devotees were very surprised and questioning. Found it very shocking. Like that. So then, we had the good fortune here in Melbourne that we had His Holiness Prahlada Nandaswami was here at the time. So devotees were asking him questions. What happened? And Maharaj said, but every day the same thing happens. How many people die every day on Earth? Out of 6 billion of us, how many people die every day?
150,000.
How many?
150,000
die every day. Is it? So every day. Nearly that many die every day. In 2 days, more people die than the sun. So then why are you getting so disturbed? It's only when it happens on a mass scale, then we all become it shocks us. And then we realize the actual nature of this material world. But normally, we don't become so disturbed. It's happening every tsunami is happening every day. That was Maharaj's point. Every day there's a tsunami. Every day people are dying. Everywhere. So then why are you not becoming so disturbed by that? So this is the nature of the material energy. Sometimes we need to be shocked. And then when we get the shock treatment, then we become sober. But otherwise, we tend to be very bewildered by Maya. But actually, everyone is dying every day. As Yamaraj said, the most surprising thing is that no one thinks it will happen to them. Everyone else is dying. You see, all your grandparents have died, all your forefathers have died, but you think, no, it will not happen to me. That is the most amazing thing. So, it is the devotee sees that it is because of a person's karma. Why does someone die untimely? Why does some person live a long life? It's because of their previous activities. If you're pious, you will live for a long time. Right? If you're impious, then you will leave your body in an untimely fashion. Now, ultimately, Maya Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharatra, right? We understand that ultimately everything is happening under the superintendence or direction of Krishna. Ultimately, it's all happening under Krishna's direction. Not directly, but indirectly. So a devotee sees everything like this. So a devotee does not become bewildered. So Swayambhu Manu is saying to Dhruva Maharaj, why are you becoming bewildered? What is wrong with your vision? You're becoming so disturbed. But don't you understand that your brother has not died? His soul is simply transmigrated, right, to another body. And this was his karma, that he died at the hands of a yaksha. Now, the Lord himself told him a few chapters ago, your brother is going to die. So he's been warned, he's been forewarned, he understands all this. He understands that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. So then why are you getting so disturbed if you understand all these things? You should have a higher type of knowledge. So these are the instructions Swayambhu Madhu is now trying to give to Dhruva Maharaj.
When Devamrita Maharaj came, he has shown us a video about bombing on Hiroshima and Nagasaki,
yeah,
where 140,000 people died in an hour.
How many?
140,000. Mm-hmm. Recorded. So yeah,
when the atomic bombs were dropped.
So Maharaj was commenting the point, only a handful of people were responsible in deciding, okay, that we have to throw a bomb. This does not mean the people on whom the bomb were thrown and they died, they are just innocent. They because they all share same living style and same karmas, so they are together. And what happened to them is just because of what they've been doing all this time. But then the question comes, why the people who have thrown the bomb there? Those people were destined to misuse their free will. So two purposes are fulfilled simultaneously. That's what came out of that discussion as well.
Yeah.
So like, we can't just blame Hitler, okay, it was only he was just trying to misuse his willpower, sorry, the free will, and other end, the people were waiting to get their karmas.
Yeah, and Prabhupada explains in this section, just the few verses before, he said it's because of animal slaughter. And we're slaughtering so many animals. And then Prabhupada says that when you slaughter animals, then when Krishna slaughters, mm-hmm. Prabhupada says it is wholesale. Right? When Krishna slaughters, then that's it. All of you. We just kill one like that. But then Prabhupada said when Krishna gets angry, then watch out. Because then it's different. You might just kill one like this, but then when Krishna kills, everyone together like that. It's much more powerful. Tsunami. Just like Gangeshwara Prabhu was telling us that where the tsunami hit in Indonesia, in all that area of Southeast Asia, he said they're all fishing villages. So they're taking so much life from the sea against God's direction. And then what happens? The sea erupts. And one day Krishna says, okay, all of you will kill, then I will kill. Watch. Much more powerful. So,
it's interesting that Dhruva Maharaj is prevented by Swayambhu from killing Kriyas, Yakshas. Whereas in the battle of this Mahabharata, there's a fault of 100 people. And Krishna instructed the Pandavas, so 640 million people are more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's explained in the beginning of the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, the beginning of the Krishna book, that Bhumi approached the Lord, that there is a overburden of the earth of impious chatteries. So when there's too many sinful people on the earth, then these things happen in order to reduce the sinful population. So, any other points? Okay. Manu continued, "My dear King Dhruva, it is simply by the illusory material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by the interaction of the three modes of material nature that creation, maintenance and annihilation take place." Hey. Monkey. Just like her father. Okay. So then Prabhupada points out that everything is under the interaction of the three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. So the whole world is working under the influence of these modes. In coordination with the time factor or Kala Shakti. So this is how the material world is working. Time and the three modes of material nature and people's karma. Like that. So this is how a devotee sees everything in this material world. It is the karma of the living entities. It is the time factor. It is the three modes of material nature. These are the subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is about Prakriti, Kala, Karma, the Jiva, right? And who controls everything? Ishvara. So that is the Bhagavad Gita. So this is how a devotee sees everything in this material world. It is simply under the influence of these different factors like that. So this is how a devotee sees. He has superior knowledge. So a devotee does not become bewildered when these things take place. Just like I remember in 1996, I was in Tasmania and they had the shootings.
Port Arthur
massacre. Biggest massacre outside of wartime up until that point. I don't know now, maybe there's been bigger. And one man, he went crazy and he shot 37 people dead, I think it was, and injured maybe 50 people or something like that. So I was staying with one devotee and we watched the news in the evening, and the head of the church, the bishop or the minister or whatever he was, he was giving his sermon on television, and he said at one point, he said, "We do not know why this has happened." And then I thought to myself, I'm just a young devotee and I'm watching this, and I can get up there and I can tell everyone exactly why it happened. So this is the advantage that one receives when one receives Divya Gyan or transcendental knowledge. When we receive the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, then we have this knowledge. And devotees, we're not bewildered. We don't become affected by the material world the same way the non-devotees become affected. The non-devotees are extremely affected by the material world. Devotees are very detached, actually. Devotees are not so affected by the material world. Because we understand things. We have transcendental knowledge. We understand Krishna's teachings. Exactly what Manu is teaching here to Dhruva Maharaj is what Krishna teaches to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. One who understands the Bhagavad Gita, he will not be illusioned anymore. He will see the difference between matter and spirit. Reality and illusion. He doesn't become bewildered. So that is the potency of having transcendental knowledge. Okay. "My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. when he gives the impetus, many other causes and effects are produced. And thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that ultimately life comes from life. It does not come from matter. Because Prabhupada points out in the purport that the materialists, they try to explain everything just based upon material causes. Oh, this did that, or this did that, or this is the cause of that. Three modes of nature are the cause of it, or time is the cause of it, or karma is it. No. But ultimately, devotees understand it is the Lord who is the cause of everything. But we must understand that although Krishna is in charge of everything, he is simultaneously aloof from everything. He is detached from everything. Even though he is responsible, it is indirect responsibility. That's why it says, Maya Yakshena. It is by my glance that everything goes into motion. Once Krishna glances at the material world and creates the material world, sets the material world in motion, then it is the activities of the living entities, the karma of the living entities, which causes the further motion within the material world. It is not Krishna directly. Krishna does not direct anyone to perform sinful activities. Krishna does not direct anyone to perform pious activities. Krishna inspires everyone to perform devotional activities. But if anyone neglects Krishna's order or his inspiration, then they perform sinful activities or pious activities. And then they must receive those reactions from Goddess Durga, or from the material energy directly. It's not that we are directly reciprocating with Krishna in the material world. The non-devotees, the materialists, reciprocating with Goddess Durga, with the material energy. In other words, you perform some punya, or some pap, some sinful activity, or some pious activity, then that reaction is coming from the material energy. It's not coming from Krishna directly. Like that. So Krishna sets everything in motion, but then he is aloof. So this is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We must understand that Krishna is not responsible. That's why, in just like my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, he went back to university and he studied religion at university. But then he said to us that as far as they can get in all the other religions in the world, they can't get beyond these questions. For example, why does God let bad things happen to good people? They can't even answer. They write essays and books, and scholars study it for years, and no one can give the answer. Right? But then any bhakta in the Hare Krishna temple can give the answer. Why do bad things happen to good people? Very simple. They perform sinful activities. And it has nothing to do with God. Everyone blames God. Why does God let it happen? Why does God let it happen? Right? It's not God letting it happen. It's you making it happen. Right? If you follow the Bhagavad Gita, then the whole thing is finished. Right? If everyone in the world begins to follow the Bhagavad Gita, what happens? Right? It all becomes peaceful. And at the end, what happens? Everyone goes back to the spiritual world. And then what happens?
Everyone is happy.
It fills up again. That's why Mahaprabhu, Vasudev Datta said to Mahaprabhu, liberate everyone in the material world. Mahaprabhu said, that is very easy. We can liberate everyone in the material world, but it will just fill up again, straight away. Because there's always souls living the spiritual world. Like that. So we understand these things. This is the potency of the Krishna conscious philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. We understand the very basic workings of the material energy, very simply. So devotees are not bewildered. We can answer all the questions. Just like sometimes we preach to people, and people say to us, "Oh, what do you think? And what do you think? Or, do you know the answer to this?" And we say, "Yes, we know the answer." Just like one time, when a reporter said to Prabhupada, "Do you know everything?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." What a bold statement. But as devotees, practically we do know everything. People can ask us any question and we can give the answer. right? Because we actually do know, because we study the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore we know. We hear God's words directly. So the reporter said to Prabhupada, "Do you know everything?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." So then the reporter said, "How many windows are there in the Empire State Building?" And Prabhupada said, "How many drops of water are there in a mirage?" Who cares?
You know, we understand it's all karma and everything, one suffers or who enjoys. Like, but there are people, like, they go and show their horoscope and see why this person has is suffering or whatever. And the astrologer tells, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this, to get over from their suffering, right? So would we take it as that person was destined to go and see the astrologer and get that, to get rid of the suffering? So was it destined to get rid of that suffering, or how do we see that? Or is it making, like yesterday we talked about material adjustments?
No, it means like knowledge. If you have knowledge, then you can change your destiny. Jnana can change karma. Therefore, what does Krishna teach in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Karma Yoga. What does he teach in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Jnana Yoga. Right? So when you add jnana to your karma, or when you begin to work, karma means work, activities, you begin to work or you act with knowledge, then you can change your destiny. Just like if I have knowledge, I walk into this room is dark, but I have knowledge, I know where the light switch is, so then everything changes. Right? So astrology just means you get some knowledge, that's all. Astrology means, okay, this is my karma. Just like if you look at my chart, I think so. Is it okay? Okay. So just like if you look at everyone's chart, there is some negative thing. Like if you look at my chart, there is debilitated Saturn in the seventh house. Right? So I have some bad karma there. Like that. So then we have knowledge. So then now we understand that is there. You can make some adjustments. You can do some different things like that. And then with knowledge, then you can change your karma a little bit. But only a little bit. What will come will still come. If Krishna wants it to come. Prabhupada said you clap your hands three times in front of the deities. All the lines on your... Someone looks at your palm, says, oh, you will die tomorrow. Clap your hands three times so you don't die. What's the big deal? So many times happen.
How do you explain bushfires that you sent here in January?
Same as we explained the tsunami. Already we gave the explanation.
Is it because people were killing too many animals?
What do you think? Of course. Any calamity, something, bushfire, tsunami, World Trade Center, it's all the same thing. Prabhupada said animal slaughter. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. Thus, it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is called Achintya Shakti. Now, Krishna's inconceivable power that everything is taking place. Now, what does that mean? That means that Krishna is not personally present, but just by His energy, so many things are going on. That is God's potency. He does not have to be personally present. We have to be personally present. Just like if you are running a machine, some machine that you are operating, as soon as you walk away from the machine stops. It will run out in due course of time. But Krishna is so potent that by His Achintya Shakti, He does not have to be personally present. Krishna is at this point in time in the spiritual world, what is He doing? Right? He's on the swing. He's enjoying Jula Nyatra right now in Goloka Vrindavan. right? And then what is taking place? Right? This whole material universe and millions of universes are running just by his energy. But he doesn't even have to be there. Just like if we walk out of the factory where we work, then what happens? Right? Everything stops. Right there. Because there is no potency there. Like that. But Krishna is so potent that everything works, he does not even have to be present. He doesn't even have to think about it. Now, therefore, he is known as Sarvagya, which means he knows everything. But he is also Mukdata. Mukdata means he doesn't remember anything. Krishna is on this swing right now with Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan, and he doesn't even know that this material world is there. But simultaneously, he knows everything. But simultaneously, he forgets it all. Just like in the other religions, what do they think God does? Right? He just sits there on a throne in heaven, and then he just all day he's thinking, oh, you know, I have to destroy that universe, and then I have to create that one. Like that. What do you think he does all day? He sits there with a piece of paper. It's just so simple. Such a simplistic understanding of God. You know, what does he do? He throws thunderbolts. Like he's the world's best dart thrower. You know, and what do you think God does? He just sits there throwing thunderbolts at people all day. So it's such a simple conception of God.
What did you say from Vishuddhartha and
Sarvagya?
Sarvagya.
And Mukdata. Sarvagya and Muk. Mukdata. Mukdata. And Sarvagya. Mukdata? I don't know what it means, but it means he forgets everything. One who gives liberation to everyone. Okay, so now I've really got no idea what it means. Because I've heard Burajan Prabhu explain that point quite a few times. And he always says that. He says, Sarvagya Mukdata. So I'll have to ask him next time and see what that means. I've heard him say it many times, so that's why. When he gives liberation.
Data in Sanskrit means one who gives.
Gives, yeah.
And Mukdata.
And Muk means. So one who is liberated. Yeah, so maybe it means one who has liberated himself from the conception of knowing. It's my speculation. It must be
something. The one who gives mukti to the people.
I know that. I'm trying to work it out in this particular correlation. Like that. Because I have heard him describe it like that a number of times, so it must mean something like that. We'll have to ask him next time. What it means. My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existing. Can we read that one?
Yeah. No.
My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existing. He is the killer of everything. He has no beginning, although he is the beginning of everything. Nor is he ever exhaustible, although everything is exhausted. Although everything is exhausted in due course of time. The living entities are created through the agency of the Father and killed through the agency of death. But he is perpetually free of birth and death. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his feature of eternal time, is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one is his ally and no one is his enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time element, everyone enjoys or suffers the results of his own karma or fruitive activities. As when the wind blows, small particles of dust fly in the air, so according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life. So Prabhupada's basic description in this final purport is man proposes,
God disposes.
So that is our philosophy. If you understand this point, then you understand the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. you understand the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Man is proposing, God is disposing. Krishna created this material world. We did not create it. We did not create this body. We just woke up one day, we were in this body. Right? Suddenly I'm in this body. We did not create it. Right? So we have no potency, no power, whatever. And we can be taken out of this body at any time. Right? Placed within or taken without. Krishna creates it all. Right? So all the living entity can do is desire. You have a little bit of free will and you have some desire. Now Krishna fulfills that desire. You propose, then he disposes. That's the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's very simple. So Swayambhuva Manu is saying to Dhruva Maharaj, right, understand these basic points. Right? Do not interfere with God's creation. Right? Do not go and kill all these living entities unnecessarily. Right? Understand that everything is working under the higher arrangements. Like that. Right? Do not become so disturbed by the material energy. So we'll stop there and we'll see you all in tomorrow night.